Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network, for the online broadcast network that features movie discussion, news, and interviews. Press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies. From the Popcorn Talk Network, the online broadcast network for movie talk, and the schmoes know, this is Meet the Movie Press. Roundtable movie news and commentary from the industry's premier film journalists.
Good morning, Schmoville. And welcome to Meet the Movie Press. I am your loyal co-host, Jeff Snyder from TheWrap.com. Mark Riley is out today, but we are very fortunate to have as a co-host, Mr. Josh Dickey at Notorious JLD from Mashable. Welcome, Josh.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be back.
No sound effect applause there, Steve? There we go.
Thank you.
We're very lucky to have him today. So yeah, what's going on? What's cracking?
I mean, you tell me, man. It's Friday, and what big scoop are you going to drop on me at Friday at 5:45? That seems to be your favorite thing to do.
Just to keep you working a little bit later on the weekend. That's a old school trick.
Yeah, the old scoop dump at 5:45, 6 o'clock to get your weekend off wrong. No, I mean, look, we need some big movie news. It's been a while since we've had anything like
that. It was a crazy week, I thought.
Yeah,
there was a lot of big stuff.
There was a lot of stuff, but I mean, like a Ben Affleck as Batman bomb. That's what we need. That's what we're waiting on. I feel like that.
I think it's coming very soon.
Oh, okay.
Just so we're clear.
Not that I was trying to tease that out, or anything.
Whether it's Spider-Man or Captain Marvel or whatever. I think.
I had read that Captain Marvel is being cast soon stuff too.
Right, we'll get into all that good stuff, but before we hit the movie news hard, you know, we this is Meet the Movie Press, and we have not met you on the show yet. We're paying for Josh's Uber for all the way from downtown. I promise you we will reimburse you for that.
I've been on the Schmoes show. I think I got them to upgrade their hats. I think that was my legacy here, was that we went from the janky baseball bro caps to some very nice newsboy caps.
It's a lasting impression. I think that they're building a statue of you. So we have worked together three different times.
Yeah.
We started out
at over yet.
Yes, who knows? We started out at The Wrap and then moved over to Variety together and then came back to The Wrap together. So, I don't know. You tell the audience, how big of a pain in the ass am I to work with?
It's always worth it to work with difficult, talented people. I think that's that would be my assessment of you, Jeff. No, yeah, we had a few. I've watched you grow from like a very, very small time rap reporter to a somewhat less small time.
Yeah,
rap
exactly.
Reporter.
Thank you very
Although
much.
I think we yeah no yes I have been I've been your boss three times, and I don't know, does it really feel that way?
No, not
like
at all.
I feel like more like, I mean, if I was a teacher, I'd be the easy A teacher. I'm not that hard to please, really.
Right. I'd always sign up for your Latin class or something.
Yeah, exactly. Which really turns into like study hall too. No, look, the only thing that I really ever had a problem with you was getting you to show up when I wanted you to show up.
Yeah, which I'm not a morning person.
I wanted you there at 10 a.m. when everyone else got there, and they would all roll in, and it would be 10:05, and 10:07 and 10:11. Where the hell is Jeff? I don't know. I'm going to text him. You know, there's always something going on.
Guys,
in the morning.
This show is the only thing I can show up on time for in life.
That's right. The irony being that you Jeff was texting me, I think, every 5 minutes this morning, making sure that I was going to be here on time.
I was very nervous that show up here at 9 and you'd be like, oh shit, that's today.
No. Yeah, you know me well enough that you have to remind me.
And so now you are over at Mashable. How long have you been at Mashable?
Almost a year to the day. It's been about a year and a couple of weeks.
And how do you like it? How do you like being out of the trade space? So
I actually really like it because I still get to kind of play in that sandbox just a little bit. I mean, I don't beat the bushes like you guys and try to get scoops and stuff like that, but I watch that space very carefully. And I also know how to mop up. So, you know, if I see somebody break something that I feel like, I should probably confirm that, I sort of know where to go.
Do you like taking the time to sort of be able to consider stories more and put them in context and do that kind of like personal reaction to the news?
I like the freedom to be able to do that, but I think you guys kind of do that anyway. I mean, you do that in real time. It used to be that we would take our time and step back and put our take on things, but now it's like we want that stuff. Like that hot take stuff has got to be immediate.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's a different world. And what we're trying to do is do viral content and build a big audience. And you know, this kind of, movie news in particular, TV developments, stuff like, you know, the new Coach show goes really well with our audience, but casting doesn't necessarily fly unless it's attached to an existing character or
IP. Right, a franchise property.
Exactly.
Right?
And so, you know, I don't quite follow it to the grain like I used to, but it's something I definitely keep a foothold in. And I watch what you guys do all the time. I mean, I'm interacting with you guys on Twitter all the time, so... You know, I'm still kind of in it. I'm just not really in the fight anymore. I think that that world, look, that's a tough place to carve out a living, man. The way that you guys go about your jobs, I know how stressful it is and how competitive it is and how difficult it is to succeed. And so, yeah, it's kind of nice to be an observer slash participant as opposed to being deep in the muck with it.
All right, well, we do miss you in the trade space, but you have been killing it at Mashable. And guys, don't forget to tweet this link out. Spread the word to your followers, because we're going to get into some crazy stuff right about now. Where should we start? Let's go with the Infinity War news, the Russo brothers being confirmed to direct. How do you feel about this?
I liked Winter Soldier. I actually didn't like it as much the first time as I did the second time, and the third time, it grew on me. I felt like, okay, I'm starting to get my head around this. Because it's a lot of moving parts, and it's a very complex structure, which I think Infinity War is going to be. I mean, look, if you read the comics, you know it will be sort of roughly based on the Infinity series, where it's just a showdown with Thanos, but you're bringing in all the elements of the Marvel Universe are slamming together at the same time. The Guardians are going to be involved. Captain Marvel is going to be involved. All those Phase 2 characters are going to be coming together. So, you know, my only problem with the Russo brothers, seriously, is that they've done one.
Right.
And it was good.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't have this,
but they're doing Civil War, which is going to be kind of huge.
I think that will be, yes. Yes.
It's interesting that after you know, Avengers 3 and 4 or whatever, they will have done 4 Marvel movies, which is the most, right?
Right.
It's just fascinating.
And we don't really know where the Marvel Universe is going after that.
Right.
That's an interesting end point to me, because what do they do at that point? Do they just keep rolling in new people and rolling out the old ones? Or, you know, that's kind of the big mystery right now that's hanging in the Marvel world, is where do they go after Phase 3?
Right. Phase 4. Spoiler alert!
Or it could be just back to a new Phase 1.
Sure. I thought it was interesting. Latino Review had a scoop this week that Marvel would like Adam McKay to direct some kind of Marvel movie. Probably, maybe, The Inhumans. I have no idea.
Wasn't he in the mix for Ant-Man?
He was, but in the end he was just like, I'll rewrite the script, but I'm not going to direct this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, it's a formula that's worked. With the Russo brothers going from comedy into action, I think it's, you know, McKay, I don't know, which one would you give him? I mean, that's what's kind of weird about it. Which character would you attach him to? But, I think that Marvel has such an iron lock on the way that their movies turn out that it almost kind of doesn't matter who your director is. It's going to have a certain quality to it as long as Kevin Feige is there.
Well, I think that we're going to be getting directors for Black Panther and Captain Marvel soon, probably before the summer. So,
okay,
it's going to be an interesting couple of months. That should take care of us on the Marvel side of things. There wasn't anything else, was there? We can jump studios over to X-Men. Which, this is just a little scooplet that I wanted to drop. I mean,
ooh,
so
I
we
like
had
when you do this.
So we had Lana Condor cast as Jubilee.
Yes.
In X-Men Apocalypse. I have never heard of Jubilee. I've never heard of the actress. What, I mean, do you know who Jubilee is?
Just tangentially. I'm not an X-Men guy. You know, I fall very much on the Avengers side of the Marvel equation and the Guardians. So I'm not that familiar with her. But, you know, I mean, it was a big deal. It was the number one trending thing on Facebook.
Sure. Well, you know, our little scooplet that I did want to drop today is that I do know that Fox right now is casting Psylocke.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Again, another character where it's like, I know that these are big deal characters, and it was funny, I was talking with a friend who you know, and being like, I've never heard of this Jubilee. He's like, bro, you gotta get it together. Like, these are big deals. I think that Psylocke will be the next B-team mutant, so to speak, that Bryan Singer unveils on his Instagram feed.
Are they trying to do a Marvel-style universe-building thing with X-Men? I mean, is that what's going on with that and with the Channing Tatum movie?
Well, I think what's interesting is, you know, we saw recently that Jennifer Lawrence came out and said you know, this is going to be her last X-Men movie, which is interesting. So I think that they know that they're losing that sort of crew soon. And which, I don't know which, you know, which ones exactly. Maybe it's just Jennifer Lawrence. But I'd be curious to see, like, how long Nick Holt is signed up and, you right. know, those kinds of people.
Yeah, and I, again, look, with these superhero properties, it's so not about the actor unless it's Robert. I mean, I think Chris Evans is getting there. Robert Downey Jr. is definitely there. But you can start to interchange people. It just doesn't, it's not going to stop these steamroller franchises. It's mm-hmm. just not, it really doesn't matter that much.
Speaking of Nick Holt, again, no real information here yet, but I know Warner Brothers loves this kid. They have obviously seen his performance in Mad Max. And he plays a pretty interesting character in that film. And I know Warner Brothers is really pleased and they're trying to find something big for him.
I saw the sizzle reel that they showed at Comic-Con last summer. And Nick Holt's, I don't know, 10, 15 seconds on screen mm-hmm. was the most indelible mark that anything made on me out of Comic-Con that year. I mean, I was like, more than the giant firestorm, more than the crazy vehicles, like just him, you know, inhaling spray paint and driving into the madness was something that will haunt my nightmares
that
forever.
Movie looks gorgeous. I can't wait to see it. It comes out in May, I think, and it's going to be over at Cannes.
It's an interesting
which
place.
Is exciting, yeah.
Interesting place to premiere that film.
But it looks like there's a certain artistry to it that puts it above other summer blockbusters.
Yeah, and they've done a lot. I mean, we've seen a lot of animated movies and fun movies premiere over there, so it's not such a stretch. But that movie, of all the sort of X-Factor movies that are out there that, you know what you're going to get with Avengers and you know what you're going to get with Star Wars, kind of, but like that, even though there's plenty of Mad Max in the canon, there's just something about that feels really fresh and like it's going to be a pretty wild ride. I'm very looking forward to that movie.
Okay, so we hit Infinity War and X-Men. Let's move on to the next gigantic franchise, Star Wars.
Oh,
this week, there is a rumor going around that Ben Mendelsohn is being eyed for a huge role in Rogue One, the spinoff that Gareth Edwards is doing with Felicity Jones. What'd you think of that?
Well, I've just started to get to know him by watching Bloodline on Netflix.
Okay, yeah. Do you like it?
I love it. I think it's great, but I kind of like that Florida noir genre because I'm a huge Travis McGee
right, swampy
fan. You know, he is so creepy on that show, and I've seen him in a couple
just
other
just on
things.
That show though.
Well, yeah, exactly. He just and what I've heard though is that in person he's very charming.
Guy blew me away at Sundance.
Yeah, like
we did an interview with him for Mississippi Grind.
Yeah, super handsome and like charming guy, and yet plays these incredibly creepy characters. He does that sort of broken, drunk, you know, half drunk, pill addicted mm-hmm. character better than anybody I've ever seen. I mean, I
that's who he's playing in Star Wars.
I would have exactly. They have OxyContin in Star Wars, and it's a huge problem. Yeah, I mean, he's gonna be the bad guy. That's what I would assume.
He could be a bad guy. He could be a mentor of sorts, like the sort of a drunken mentor who gets pulled out of retirement to pull off some thing with, you know, Felicity Jones. Who knows?
Poor Ben Mendelsohn. He's just
I'm just speculating because I don't know the Star Wars like role at all. I just know like archetypes of characters.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't know. He's not. I've not seen him in like an action role, so I don't really know if he can like wield a lightsaber and bounce around and look sort of cool that way, but he's a hell of an actor.
He is. No, he's amazing. Love him in Place Beyond the Pines. Mississippi Grind is his first real leading role. And I would encourage people to check it out. It's not my favorite movie from Fleck and Bowden, but it's good. So yeah, Ben Mendelsohn, kind of exciting.
Look, anytime you throw an actor into the Star Wars world, you know, that's
going
to be
a
big deal.
I tried to have fun with our story, too. You know, I was like, Ben Mendelsohn's going to be playing someone who's older than Felicity Jones. Exclusive.
Boy, did you get it for that?
Jesus. The internet was like, dude, of course he's going to be.
You got it for that.
Or the whole, like, well, he could be playing a CGI alien, and maybe that alien's 7 years old.
Yeah, that's what happens, though, when you start to assign meaning to things.
Mm-hmm.
You're just going to catch hell for it.
And then, you know, I was like, a plot details are being kept in a insert, you know, Star Wars reference here that only diehard fans will understand. Just because, like, Boris Kitt does a great job of that over at Hollywood Reporter's, like, plot details are being kept in a locker on Tatooine. And I'm like, I don't know what any of that shit means. I would love to have that knowledge to be able to draw upon. But
yeah, the plans are being transported across space in a spice freighter.
Okay, moving on. We're going to hit these topics hard today.
All right, man, keep it rolling.
Yeah, 50 Shades of Grey. Sam Taylor Johnson officially not coming back, which I tweeted 4 weeks ago.
I assumed that was all true and known and left it behind. It's an exclusive on Deadline.
You know what else is an exclusive on Deadline this week? The Oscar producers aren't coming back after they basically go on Twitter and they're like, we're not coming back.
Yeah. Well, but look, it's never official until it's on Deadline.
Exactly.
And it never actually happened until it's... Yeah.
Nothing is real until Pete Hammond reports it.
Pixar didn't happen is pretty much now just Deadline or it didn't happen.
So right? Sam Taylor Johnson exiting 50 Shades of Grey, is that a good thing, a bad thing?
I don't think she could have come back. I mean, everything we've heard about the dynamics on that
with
set
her and EL,
with her and EL and... I mean,
EL is not going anywhere.
No, and did she really say she wanted to direct it? I mean, she wanted to write the script. That's right. Which is equally as ridiculous. Why can't we just let movie people who are experts at making movies do their jobs? Why does everybody have to do everything vertically these days? I thought Sam did a nice job with that movie. I thought she did the best movie she possibly could, given what she was given. And between her and the screenwriter, they actually made a watchable film out of something that was kind of unreadable. I mean, mm-hmm. I couldn't get to the good parts of that book because it was so bad. And I think there's a lot of people who had that experience. So, I mean, again, just get a skilled director. She's clearly very good, but just wasn't going to be able to do that again.
Do you think that they should necessarily hire a female director?
No.
Just the best person for the job.
I always think you just hire the best person for the job. But
sure. But I mean, with 50 Shades of Grey, I think it was kind of clear that they were going to hire a woman. Just like I guess here's another little scooplet. The Captain Marvel director is definitely going to be female.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Good. That's good.
I'm 95% sure.
Okay. I think I know who it's going to be.
Really?
I just have a guess. It's just literally
a guess.
Do
you want to say it here or you want to protect it?
It's not based on any knowledge, so I'll just say I think it's Angie.
Okay.
That's who I think it's going to be.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And that rumor has definitely been going around.
Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, and we already heard, that Marvel had offered her
$20
million.
Something people talked about.
No, there was an actual, I think it was Us Weekly or OK Magazine or something that reported that Marvel had offered her $20 million to direct it. I'm saying I've actually heard, in Hollywood that Angie was going to direct it, but I had heard recently that it was down to two female directors, so I would just be surprised if it was her. I don't see her serving that studio's vision. She is kind of a filmmaker who does her own thing.
I just feel like she tried the Oscar thing, and there had to have been some level of disappointment on her part there. I know that she had some difficulty with that. I didn't realize that was actually a rumor. I thought that was just something people were talking about. Wouldn't that be cool?
I felt
something about it felt right to me.
I think it's a real rumor, but just because, I mean, there's only so many female directors who you really hear rumors about.
That's true.
Her and Catherine Bigelow. No one's gossiping about Sam Taylor Johnson and what she might be doing.
I'd like to see Biggs tackle that. What is she working on right now?
Who knows? She's very secretive.
She is very secretive.
I actually think, just to throw it out there, Liza Johnson would be interesting for 50 mm-hmm. Shades of Grey. She's done a couple of movies just about strong female protagonists, like Return, or, she did Hate Ship, Love Ship with Kristen Wiig and Hailee Steinfeld. I just know she's a female director who is coming up within the studio system.
What about Sofia?
Sofia Coppola?
Yeah.
Doing 50 Shades of Grey?
Yeah.
Totally possible. Her next movie, The Little Mermaid, is at Universal. So it'd be interesting if they were like, listen, we will make your movie, but just do this one for us.
Yeah.
Maybe she'll do number three. It'd be interesting.
It would be. I'd love to see her take
on that. She's not the type of filmmaker who I think is going to serve someone else's...
It's not necessarily a fit for her, but I'd love to see it.
Sure.
It would be cool.
Okay. What happened? My computer. Okay, tell me about the Mad Men premiere this week. I kind of wanted to hear about that. We're going to switch gears for a second.
I have now seen that episode twice, and I need to see it a third time because it is a very unusual Mad Men episode. I can't get my head around it. it's going to be a little... There are elements of it that are going to jolt you a little bit. We were actually given very specific instructions of what not to talk about.
Oh, interesting. Like the plot points, spoilers.
It was a list of five things that we were not allowed to talk about. And I almost feel like by giving you the list of those things...
Yeah, no.
It would spoil those things, so I can't say what they were.
That's fine.
But they were very specific.
And you were dressed up, huh? Like, they encouraged you to come in Mad Men period garb.
Well, I mean, it was a formal ball, black tie ball. So I just, you know, I went for the early period Mad Men look, the 60s look, as opposed to... I've tried to find a red plaid suit somewhere, but it's very difficult to pull together on short notice. It was a black and red ball. It was really lovely. It was at the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion. The entire cast was there. They spent a lot of time on the red carpet, pretty much talking to everybody. It was their final time being together for really any reason, so you probably will never have that group of people assembled again.
Sure.
The question that I got one question in, so I just asked everybody the same question. I asked them which character they thought would make a good spin-off.
Right, I saw that, and I watched some of those, and you did it on Instagram, right?
I did, yep.
Okay.
I did them all on Insta just because it was a 15-second video
who had,
roll.
Who had the best idea?
Well, I actually think, I mean, it was funny. Two people picked Pete, two picked Roger, and then Kieran Shipka said that it should be Peggy. But honestly, my answer is it should be Kieran Shipka. They should do a movie. I'm sorry, they should do a show about Sally Draper. Like
coming up in what? It would be the
70s?
Yeah,
like coming into teenhood in the early 70s, having to deal with her crazy family.
Right.
You know, you have all this opportunity to backfill the Don Draper story, but also, you know, her own... I mean, she's just very compelling on that show. I don't know. Something about her character is, to me, one of the most...
See, I've only... I don't watch Mad Men, so I've only seen about 6 to 8 episodes from the first season.
Oh,
she was a little girl.
She's a kid.
So, yeah. Interesting, though. So I wanted to have a conversation today, guys, about crediting. Okay?
Oh, boy. And it's a big thing right now.
It's a huge thing, you know, particularly there's been a lot of talk about crediting deadline, which doesn't often recognize people for their hard work. But, you know, we're going to start things off with just, you know, a little bit of an incident that happened yesterday with Roger Friedman over at Showbiz 411, who I really like. You know, I think we are both kindred spirits in a sense, Roger and I. And he broke a great story yesterday about Viola Davis doing some courtroom drama called Custody that the author of Into the Woods is going to write and direct. And obviously, you know, she is going to do Suicide Squad next month. She's going to be playing Amanda Waller. But I think, you know, if she can slip in this indie afterwards, which while still on hiatus from the show, she's going to do it. So Roger broke the story, and I know how Roger kind of gets with crediting. So it took me 12 calls to confirm this story. And I finally post it, and at the bottom of the story, I say Roger Friedman, so I mentioned him by name, at Showbiz 411, broke the story. So he gets the credit. I linked to him as well. I did a hyperlink and mentioned him by name. That's three things.
Okay.
And I get a DM from Roger, and he's like, you know, that mention should be higher up in the story. And I was like, what do you, like, you know, when I do Variety, Hollywood Reporter, Deadline, even Latino Review... They all go at the bottom of the story, and the only reason to me is, you know, I did this week, I think Deadline got a really interesting quote from someone, and I wanted to use that quote in my story, and so you have to credit them. So in the third or fourth paragraph, it's like so-and-so told Deadline, which broke the story.
Right, which is fine.
Right. So, you know, what is the proper method? You know, where did these mentions go? They go at the bottom to me, no?
They go at the bottom if you are in that world... And you have the ability to confirm it yourself.
Right.
They go at the bottom.
Right.
If you're not in that world and you don't have the ability to confirm it yourself, you should put it up somewhere, you know, according to, so it doesn't seem like you've done your own reporting.
Sure. That's fine.
Yeah. You were fine. You did everything fine.
Like, well, you know, when somebody dies, maybe, and TMZ reports it, and we can't get the confirmation yet.
In the lead.
Right. It's in the lead, you know? If you don't have your own confirmation, I think it goes in the first or second paragraph for sure.
Totally agree.
But yeah, it's like, Roger, I did this reporting on my own. What more do you want from me, guy? Bubby, I love you.
Yeah, he's...
And he's like, you disappointed me. And I'm like...
Oh, for Pete's sake.
Yeah,
come on, man. You know, he'll get over it. I mean, that's just... I think... I hate to say it because I respect Roger and everything he's done, but...
Yeah.
I think that's just him being a little naive. about sort of how this game works and just not doing it that much.
Like, sure, not doing sure. And I really like him too. And he's been around a long time, and now he's kind of doing his own thing, which is great.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was just a little, and you know, Devin, and obviously we love Devin on the show. He called me out this week for not crediting him immediately on the Russo brothers, the Infinity War stuff. And really, it was just that I got the confirmation. I wanted to get one or two paragraphs out there, and I hadn't built the story yet. So he's like, "Don't look at the rap, not crediting." I'm like, "I'm not done.
Yeah, give me
with the
beat.
Story. Give me 10 to 15 minutes." And it was there, and it was linked. You know, yeah. Like, yeah,
it's got some. There's a little bit of optics at play here, right? Because if you're putting out two paragraphs. You know, and you have done the confirmation or you've done your own work.
Sure.
Then if the credit is in there, then it essentially defaults to that third paragraph because you're only putting out two paragraphs. Plus, it's just, you know, you're trying to make up every second you possibly can when you're in the moment.
Right.
I don't feel like, you know, again, people get, I think people, listen, it's what happened is the climate has gotten so toxic with crediting, and that's largely credit to Deadline, who has made everybody hypersensitive about it.
Right.
That it's the first thing we're looking for. As soon as you break a story, you start seeing who's picking it up. Are they crediting me? It's just the nature of our paranoid industry here. So, you know, I mean, I do the same thing. Like when I anytime you break something, you just start immediately looking around and you want to, you know, you reflexively call people out. So, you know, yeah, like we could all probably, if everybody just played nice and sort of understood the rules, like this would not be such a thing.
We've changed, you know, our own policies of the rep. I credit the Hollywood Reporter now. I feel like everybody, and you know, you guys, it kills me. It kills me when I have to credit Deadline probably twice a day. But you know, they're breaking major stories and it's just the right thing to do. So as much as it kills me and I have to grit my teeth and bear it, you have to do it.
It does seem like there is a movement afoot though, and I have decided to participate in this and I won't get too much into
right.
it.
Right. Ain't It Cool does it too, I think.
Where it's like, if they're not going to respect Latino Review, which has now broken how many stories in the past couple of year
right.
or couple
a
of
lot.
Months? I mean, like a lot, like they're on a roll right now. Like they're not dabbling. They're here. They've established themselves. They have credibility in the marketplace. Everybody else credits them. Why are they holding the line on this?
Right.
It's what it is there's an arrogance about not crediting anyone ever that says what the message behind that is we break more news than you guys do. We're better at this than all of you. We're the best. So we don't really need to play nice with you. We can just be assholes.
Right.
And it doesn't really affect us.
Mm-hmm.
That has been my issue with them since the very beginning. It's like,
and I don't know if it's a holdover from Mike and Nelly's trade days, where, you know, and back then the trades did not credit.
Did we credit when we were at Variety? I don't think we did.
We started to, maybe, but I don't think, certainly not to the Hollywood Reporter.
No.
Variety and Hollywood Reporter never really credited each other. They just recently did.
They've started doing it?
I think that they do.
Well, good.
Now,
I mean,
yeah.
I never thought that was right. I just didn't do it because they didn't do it. It was this weird arms race.
But like back in the day, you know, I think even before you got to Variety, there was no crediting.
Yeah, of any kind.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah. It's very arrogant. I mean, and it's just also old-fashioned. These days, we, you know, this group of people that, when we all know each other now, like,
I just feel like you gotta give me 15 minutes. 15
yeah,
minutes.
Exactly.
To do a right through my story, and I promise that the attribution will be there.
Yeah.
Cause, you know, I know how sensitive I get. And Roger was like, dude, you complain all the time. It's like, I complain when I'm not credited.
Right.
Or if the credit goes to someone else because people are just lazy and they're just checking deadlines.
Right.
And so that's where they saw.
To the first thing they see.
So a couple of controversies this week. We got some time. There are two in particular I wanted to discuss. One is the Get Hard controversy.
Oh boy.
Have you seen the movie?
I have not seen the film. I know. Okay. I mean, I've read so much about it though. I feel like I have.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think it was really Drew McWeeny, just HitFix in general, really leading the charge. I think it was Louis Vertel who had asked Kevin Hart and Will Ferrell a pretty interesting question. I saw the film this week. I laughed a lot. I'm not going to lie. I thought it was pretty funny. It was also very racist and homophobic.
Yeah.
Particularly homophobic. And I think I sat next to two gay critics, and they were mortified. They were like, what the fuck are we watching? I can't believe that this exists in 2015.
Yep. Here's the thing. It's funny. A colleague of mine we were talking about this a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
The gay sex joke, which is in almost every comedy at this point.
Yep.
The, you know, the aversion to gay sex. Oh, you're gay. No, you're gay. We saw it in The Interview. We saw it. You see it in every comedy. Its time has come. It's over. The joke is not funny anymore. It's just the way it is. We have evolved to this point where that joke no longer is appropriate. And yet it's continuing to happen. And what Get Hard's unfortunate position is that they are going to be the one that everybody's going to point to and go, that movie is, you know, it's not that movie's fault.
It's just the tipping point?
It's just the tipping point. It was too much at the right time. And I think you're, in the same way that I think Exodus, Gods and Kings is probably the last film where we'll ever see just a bunch of white actors in roles that were, you know, historically meant
right.
for not, a completely not. Different ethnicity. And that's a good thing. That, you know, this is good.
It's evolution.
This is progress.
We're
right.
evolving, yeah.
You know, this is not the time to shake your fist at Get Hard. This is time to put your hand in the air and say, thank God we're finally recognizing that this is an old-fashioned, outmoded joke that we need to stop making. Now, I'm sure other people will continue to make it, but they're going to be viewed as behind the times. And Hollywood isn't stupid. If Get Hard has problems and there's controversy around it and it doesn't do that well, just like Exodus, Gods and Kings had some serious box office problems. I think you somewhat attribute that to the controversy. They'll stop making the joke.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, this is how change happens, is when something is just gets to a point where we're all just like, ugh, enough. And, you know, so it's a good thing. It's time.
Well, I'm a big believer in free speech, and I'm not the kind of guy who wants to say what is appropriate and what is not appropriate for a comedy. So I would side with Kevin Hart and Will Ferrell in that they are totally, you know, allowed to sort of make this kind of movie. And, you know, when Louis Vertel asked that question, I think Will Ferrell had just sort of said, like, these are just sort of the societal norms, whether we like it or not, and, you know, we didn't invent them. They're just kind of the way it is. So I won't sort of fault them for that. And I think that there is still a place for gay jokes. But when your entire movie is made up of those, that's a problem.
Yeah.
That's where I sort of fall on that.
I mean, you're talking about, you know, we're acting like something that somebody does as just a part of their life, that's a just completely normal part of their life, is like the worst thing that could possibly happen to you.
Right. Yeah, that is weird.
That's a premise of the movie.
It's a fear of the penis.
Yeah, it's just really...
And I guess guys think, you know, guys laugh, you know, out of homophobia or uncomfortableness, and women laugh too, because, let's face it, the male penis is hideous, right?
Yeah, well,
they have the right to be,
That's
terrified.
Why some people are gay and some people are straight, because they have different preferences and aversions. That's just the way we're wired. But to act like it's some kind of, like, you know, horrible death sentence is just...
I agree.
We're beyond that.
And you know what? Hot Tub Time Machine 2 did it too, or it's just the worst thing in the world of Hot Tub Time Machine 2 is gay sex. That scene, I thought, you know, went over like lead. It was not very funny, the Craig Robinson stuff. Okay, the other controversy, and we don't need to dwell on it, but this week Deadline's Nelly Andreeva just got ripped for an article on diversity.
I enjoyed reading that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I felt bad for her in a sense, because I don't think that Nelly is a racist or anything, but I think that, yeah, she basically let a lot of unnamed sources sort of dictate a certain agenda, because they're, you know, it's agents and managers, and they all probably have more white clients than black clients or whatever. It just felt very misguided and tone deaf.
There might even be a grain of truth to the notion that, you know, that there's a, like a corrective period happening here, and fine, good. Like, that's the problem is that we somebody looked at that and said, well, wait, no, this is too much. Like, you don't know that it's too, there is no too much. That's
right.
Such an arbitrary thing to even think, and, let alone say.
And guys, remember on iTunes, just to rate, subscribe, tweet this link out, because we're just warming up here.
That's right.
We still got plenty of show.
We're getting into the good stuff.
Yeah. So back to this Deadline controversy. I mean, I just don't know. Like when she said the pendulum has swung too far, and now it needs to swing back in favor of white people.
The most ridiculous thing.
Yeah.
I don't. No, Nelly, I've not met her. I only know her body of work, having read countless hundreds of stories of hers, and they all sort of strike me the same way. Very dispassionate, sort of almost robotic, just delivery of what I'm being told.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's some element of that here. It doesn't excuse Nelly. Nelly's not stupid. She thinks, you know, critically. Honestly, I think the problem here is with any problematic news story that like this that shows up anywhere is that there wasn't a filter. The filter was
right.
Was
she is the editor, the TV editor, and so yeah. She probably didn't submit it to anyone or get another pair of eyes on that article. Someone who may have said maybe we should reconsider some of this and some of the language. I think the term ethnic was used more than 20 times.
Yeah, I mean, I think again, what every time I read that site, I'm like, do they have editors? And they do. But I don't think that story, something of that nature, should go through multiple senior editors at a publication like
right.
that. I think Deadline is incredibly lean and nimble, and they write stuff and maybe one other person who's posting it and putting links and photos in takes a look at it, and it's just like, hey, you know, she outranks me by a good piece. Who am I to say? Let's take a step back. And it went out. And you've seen, I mean, look, Mike's gotten himself into trouble with stuff like this
right,
before, too.
Anti-woman stuff or whatever. I'll put it, you know, not to defend Nelly necessarily, but the central premise of the article is not necessarily off base. Just that, you know, my roommate is a white actor. I have, you know, white actor friends, and they were basically telling me that this pilot season was just, it seemed different than others because they couldn't get auditions. And if you don't have leading man looks as a white guy, you couldn't get an audition because all those quirky supporting roles and character actor parts or whatever were going to minority actors. Now that's fine, especially when a lot of they're making more shows that, you know, feature minorities, whether it's the Uncle Buck movie, TV show, whatever it is. But I certainly have heard the same complaints from white actors. It's just the message, I think, got a little botched in delivery.
And totally botched. And to those white actors that say, man, how does it feel?
Yeah.
How do you like it?
Right.
You know, like.
Mm-hmm. And Frank, but it's like, you know, we talk about colorblind casting a lot here. Colorblind casting doesn't just mean, you know, giving roles to minorities. It means really just not thinking about race and just letting the best person, get the role. And I don't know.
Even that has some pitfalls in it because you start to think, well, you know, okay, this story is about a white guy who lives in a white neighborhood. Most people around him are going to be white. So, you know, here we go. Let's see who we got. Like, you do have to make change in a situation. And when we look at the casting situation and when you look at the director's situation, you know, it's out of whack.
Absolutely.
It's out of whack.
Absolutely.
No matter how you feel about this, the numbers don't lie.
And these are growing audiences, the minority audiences.
Well, also, I mean, look at a show like Empire, for crying out loud.
Right, exactly. That's the breakout TV hit of the season.
I was waiting for that day of the week to come around, too. And mm-hmm. I mean, look, I couldn't get any whiter. I'm from Minnesota, for crying out loud.
There's been a lot of examples of Jane the Virgin, Blackish, Fresh Off the Boat.
Right.
A lot of breakout hits that aren't starring white people, so why wouldn't you serve that clearly hungry audience?
And this is how Hollywood works. And when it starts making money, it starts making sense on the bottom line to do it. That, oh, everybody's just all, you know, I mean, you know, but that's it has gone so far that now the reality is that you do a show with an ethnic cast very well, and we are like, well, that looks different. This is really interesting. Empire was fascinating to me. And I don't particularly like hip hop music.
Right.
And I don't like soap operas. And I think network
shows
are cheesy. But this was like the first time I saw this, it was like an electric live wire. I was like, this is interesting and fascinating, and I have to stay on this wave.
Well, I just, you know, the term ethnic or whatever is funny because a lot of people pointed out, well, you know, white or Caucasian, that's an ethnicity too. But again, just to keep in mind, you know, I saw Cynthia Littleton at Variety wrote something on her Facebook. You know, don't let one mistake sort of define a person. And Nelly's reputation, while it certainly maybe took a hit, it shouldn't destroy her reputation. She has, you know, two or three decades in the trenches here. I don't know.
That's just hustling, though. That was a tough. Sure, that's gonna be a tough
it's
one to bounce
tough
back
to it is, but you know, I thought Nelly, she came right back yesterday and was dropping TV things. She didn't hide from it.
Yeah,
I mean, look, she hasn't addressed
Amy Pascal,
right?
Went through this. Amy Pascal just went through this,
of course,
and she came right out. I don't know if you saw her do her, that interview with Tina Brown, but you know, she addressed it head on. But that night after her emails about Obama came out, she was at the interview premiere, you know, in a public place.
Right.
I mean, you know, I think, yes, when you sort of cower and you circle the wagons and you issue wishy-washy apologies and you go dark for a while, I think that's much worse. I think the much better play is to come out. I mean, I think everybody who works there, I think you could replace every single person at Deadline with the leadership of ISIS and they would still break all the news in town. Right. And people would, there's nothing that you could do to bring
either
that
way,
down.
I did think it was a classy move on Cynthia's part to have her friends back. And if I, you know, I guess I'm the next most likely person to do something like that. I hope you'd have my back too.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
At least not on that. Okay. So we're going to do some quick hits. We got about 10 minutes left in the show. Bradley Cooper to direct A Star Is Born. Do we need another one of these movies? Because I say yes.
This feels like one of those projects that's going to fall apart to me, but I don't know. I mean, how engaged is it?
Again, Warner Brothers has been trying to make this movie for the better
forever.
Part of a decade.
I remember us reporting on this back in the early days of Variety.
It is, yeah, of course. And, you know, we heard a different, we heard like 18 million people. It's like Tom Cruise,
yeah,
and Christian Bale. And, but Bradley Cooper, it's just an interesting choice to make your directorial debut with, because normally maybe you would do a smaller movie and then go do a bigger studio movie like that. But he, you know, the guy's coming off American Sniper. It's a huge hit for them. He's swinging for the fences, and obviously they're trying to get Beyonce.
It feels like the right movie. It feels like the right time. I don't think every actor should try to be a director.
Right.
But I actually think that Bradley Cooper is pretty bright, mm-hmm, and gets it and, you know, maybe could do pretty well with this. I think that working with Clint probably really inspired him. And
right.
Wasn't Clint... Oh, right, he was.
Yeah,
he was
really attached, yeah, to direct. Yep.
So it all kind of makes sense to me. I'm kind of rooting for Bradley in this case.
Okay.
I get irritated when actors want to. It's like, can't you just let the directors direct? You know, like, why do we have to do all the stuff?
Right.
Can't you?
Well, everyone wants to be Ben Affleck these days. That's the thing. Including me.
Stay in your lane. I mean, he's such a great actor. This movie he's going to direct is going to be one less role that he's going to do, and it's going to be
two or three less roles. I mean, this is,
that's,
you know,
right. That's right. It's a lot more energy.
Yeah,
to
you got prep, you got post. This isn't just the shoot,
and it's also one less job that a director who is a dedicated director is going to get.
Right.
That's a silly thing for me to really quibble about, but it just gets under my skin a little bit sometimes.
Okay. Again, this is the lightning round. Super Troopers 2, yay or nay?
Oh, sure. Why not? Why didn't they do it earlier? Why did they have to kickstart that movie?
Yeah, they couldn't get...
$2 million.
Yeah, that was surprising.
I mean, Fox Searchlight could find $2 million on the couch cushions. Like, why are we going to the public with this?
Yeah, they definitely have a fan base. I actually... was not the biggest Super Troopers fan. I remember liking like the first half an hour of that movie, and then it was like a one joke kind of thing.
Well, it feels like a TV show that went on for 90
minutes.
And it
should be a TV show. Why not? Those Broken Lizard would be perfect for a TV show.
That'd be a great Netflix series or something like that, right?
That should just go to Fox.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. We're going
to
get it.
24 to 48 hours, it had its $2 million. So who knows how big this movie's budget gets. They could have like a $20 million Super Trooper sequel if
well,
people keep giving.
Veronica Mars made its $2 million in a day. And they wound up with, I think, 5.7. Mm-hmm. And so their budget was around $10
million. Okay.
And that movie, I'm a huge Veronica Mars fan. This is my favorite TV show of all time.
And?
Without question. The movie was fun.
Yeah, I got through 75 minutes of it and turned it off.
It was a fun reunion. That was about all I got out of it, and I didn't rate that much
money.
Okay.
Oscar producers. Who would you like to see take over? Marin and Zayden are out. Thank God.
I saw somebody say, who was it said yesterday? Maybe it was Poland, who said, let Apatow do it.
Yeah, he'd be interesting.
Sure. Somebody with a name.
Even Tim Gray, but Tim Gray actually yesterday suggested John Skipper at ESPN, which is actually not a bad call at all.
That's it. He's a really funny guy.
He's done a lot of,
and
you know,
really
he knows
sharp.
Live TV.
Yeah.
And people, you know, Tim was saying how people don't think of the show as live TV. It's not a movie.
A super point, because a lot of a lot of the producers we've seen along the way are these guys with Oscar or with movie pedigree.
Right, exactly.
Not TV pedigree. Interesting.
But Apatow would be a great call. I think.
I don't think he'll do it. It's just too much time.
And honestly, you know, Brett Ratner. Brett Ratner was going to do it before.
Give him a shot.
He put his foot in his mouth. He made one gay joke, like Gethard, and paid the price. So I would kind of love to see him get another shot at it because I think he'd be fun.
He did his time. I'm not a big Brett Ratner fan, but
I love him.
Something. I mean, I'm not a hater on Brett Ratner.
He's a nice guy in person. Have I told you? He talked to my mom after a junket. I was like, Mom, I just interviewed Brett Ratner. I was like in college, and I was like, he's right behind me right now. And
he went on with her.
Yeah, he talked to my mom. I'll always like Brett Ratner.
He seems like a gamer and like a super hard worker and a smart, you know, like all the things you want somebody to be. And that comment was super unfortunate because I really don't think that reflects on him at all.
I would have been psyched for like Eddie Murphy to potentially host or whatever the plan was, but okay, we got about 5 minutes left in the show, Josh. Idris Elba, Star Trek 3.
As a villain or something like that?
Yeah, I think so. Possibly a Klingon, who knows?
I don't know, man. Can we just get this guy a movie franchise? Like that's not Bond.
Yeah.
By the way, because Bond is boring for him. Like, he'd be a great Bond. Yes, he would be a great Bond, but he would be a great something completely different. Like, he's a leading man. He's a leading man.
Mm-hmm.
Just no question about it.
You know, he'd be kind of interesting for this book. And I was reading the sequel during jury duty and it wasn't that good. But Beat the Reaper, which DiCaprio has had the rights to for ages, and they were going to do it as a movie and then an HBO series or miniseries or something. But it's this really cool book, Beat the Reaper. I think Idris Elba would be perfect for that and could potentially be a franchise.
I would have loved him as Travis McGee.
Yeah, that would have been interesting.
Of Travis McGee. He would have a black Travis McGee. Bring it.
And that's going to be Christian Bale. But even, you know, Green Lantern, who hasn't been cast yet, right?
Yeah, that's true.
He'd be interesting.
But once again, we're shoving him into an existing, I don't know.
Right.
I'd like to just, and I'm not saying this has to be an original character necessarily, mm-hmm. but like, he's just one of those guys I feel like Hollywood hasn't figured out what to do with yet. He's just too, you know.
I hear you.
He's too good to be doing the stuff that they're putting him into at this point. And, you know, he's not getting any younger. Like, let's get this guy into something. Like, he should be Brad Pitt level.
Yeah, people love him. I mean, I don't hear anybody say like, oh, I don't like Idris Elba. Key and Peele's substitute teacher. Do you watch Key and Peele?
No.
Have you ever seen the sketch?
I know a little bit. I mean, yeah, I've read about it. But
those guys are going to be huge movie stars.
You think so?
Yeah, I think they're going to be like, maybe not Judd Apatow level producers, but I think that they're going to be a brand like the Duplass brothers, almost in a sense. Like
I didn't mean to sound so surprised because I know how talented they are and I know how funny they are. I'm not a regular watcher of the show.
I really want Police Academy that reboot to come together. I don't know if I see Substitute Teacher necessarily being a great movie. But it could be a lot of fun.
I mean, it's kind of like SNL style, you know, moving into the film. I mean, if it works, it works. It's been proven to work with SNL, so why not Key and Peele?
Well, there were a lot of SNL bombs too, of course.
That's true. They all wind up being cult hits, though. That's what's so weird about this movie.
Are you a Chuck Palahniuk fan?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, they announced a Lullaby movie, which I was kind of excited for, but there's, you know, I'd love to see Invisible Monsters or Survivor, too. Real quick, before we go, you saw the Furious 7 movie,
yes,
right?
Yes, I did.
Give us your thoughts, because I still have not seen it.
I was not supposed to see it, but I did see it.
Ooh, you went to Vin Diesel's house.
I was not supposed to see it, because Universal doesn't want me to see it for some reason.
Okay. I just don't think they care about the critics seeing it. I mean, they set, you know, a 7 p.m. AMC Burbank press screening.
No.
Dude, that is deep in the valley.
Yep. They are trying to discourage credits, which is dumb, because critics like it. Everybody loves this franchise.
Yeah.
So I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do.
Okay.
Here. I'm going to write...
And before you get started, Steve, let us know how much time we have.
I'm going to write two reviews.
Yeah. Two reviews coming.
A good one.
Yeah.
And a bad one.
Okay.
I'm going to cross-link them.
Wow.
Without explanation.
Uh-huh.
Because I cannot figure out how to feel about this franchise. I have been stewing about it for a week. I think it's ridiculous that a movie that people basically go to see these movies because they're bad.
Ridiculous, yeah.
That's what they like about them is how bad they are. Mm-hmm. And I just can't, and how corny they are. Like, people were howling at these lines of dialogue that are meant to be very heartfelt and very, you know, and these stunts that are like clearly what, you know, they spend millions of dollars doing live action stunts that are just utterly ridiculous. I can't.
Right, it's like a car just, comes out of a plane onto a boat.
I can't buy in to that level of stupidity. It's like you gave the stupidest kid in class carte blanche to write scenes in a film, and then then somebody spent a shitloads of money to put it on screen, and we're just laughing at it.
And it'll make more in one day than we'll ever make in our lives.
We're mocking it. Nobody's taking it seriously, and yet it's taking itself seriously. And it's just this mission.
I can't wait to read those. I'm probably going to see it opening weekend with a group of friends. Probably
it's a fun time at the movies. That's why it works. People were laughing for all the wrong reasons.
I just don't know what happened to like the grounded sort of action movie, like a Die Hard, where like technically everything in Die Hard was plausible and could happen in the real world. Those don't exist anymore. We need crazy explosions and cars with parachutes.
I mean, I guess for a little while, like the Bourne franchise kind of went in that direction. And, you know, like, even Bond kind of sort of veered into that for a little while, like Casino Royale. But it's going the other direction again now. It's just, I mean, when you see the scene where the cars fly out of the airplane and land. And then, I just make one point about Furious 7. And this won't spoil anything.
Sure.
The whole premise of the film, they're chasing after this piece of technology that they need to catch Jason Statham.
Right.
Okay? That's like the thing
they're
going
after.
That's the MacGuffin. They're going after that hard. In three separate situations, while they're chasing after that piece of technology, Jason Statham is right there.
Right.
He's there the whole time. And nobody's like, oh my God, there he is. Well, we can forget about that thing. No, they're just focused on getting the computer chip. It's just so ridiculous.
I can't wait to see it myself with a gigantic plate of nachos. I think we have reached our time limit, folks. Remember to, rate and comment and subscribe on iTunes, all that fun stuff that Riley always takes care of, so I'm not very eloquent. But thank you very much for coming up here, Josh. Where can we find you on Twitter?
I am at NotoriousJLD, as I always have been.
And it is a great Twitter feed. Do follow it. I am at The Insnyder. You can find him at Mashable. Myself at The Wrap. Guys, have a great weekend. What comes out this weekend? I don't even know.
Do they have movies this weekend?
Hard.
Yeah,
whatever.
Get Hard is coming out this weekend. Oh, boy.
Yeah, we'll be back with Mark Riley next week. A hopeful news break, all that good stuff. Have a wonderful weekend.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only, not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.